Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. April is Autism Month here in the United States, and April 2nd was World Autism Day. We continue to look at autism spectrum disorder, or simply autism, a range of conditions characterized by some degree of impaired social behavior, communication, and language. It involves a narrow range of interests and activities that are both unique to the individual and carried out repetitively. The condition begins in childhood and tend to persist into adolescence and adulthood. We will discuss autism on the program today and other developmental disabilities. Joining us live via phone from Nigeria, Lagos, is Dr. Badewa Adejube Williams. She is founder of the Royal School of Educational Therapy. Dr. Williams is also, she wears many hats actually, and she is an educational specialist, educationist with core specialization in pupils with disabilities, educational therapist, director, producer, stage manager, and even an actress. Dr. Williams, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good night.
So many titles. How do you keep your schedule?
By practicing educational therapy on myself.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. So it's so good to have you join us today, Dr. Williams. So let me tell our listeners that we will talk to you about autism and more in a moment. But first, we have this report by VOA's reporter Jessica Behrman. Take a listen.
Children with autism spectrum disorder have trouble communicating, learning, and socializing with the outside world. The condition runs the spectrum from mild awkwardness to complete social isolation. So far, 65 autism risk genes have been identified, but how they disrupt the brain's natural development is still unknown. Investigators think there could be anywhere from 400 to 1,000 autism genes altogether. Using what they call a machine learning computer program, researchers at Princeton University in the United States discovered 2,500 genes they believe could play a role in ASD. The new leads were published in the journal Nature Neuroscience. A researcher at Princeton's Lewis Sigler Institute for Integrative Genomics, Arjun Krishnan, says there are 25,000 genes in the human body. To narrow down the genes within the vast brain circuitry that may contribute to the development of ASD, investigators looked at the huge array of connections among genes responsible for brain function. Krishnan likened it to finding friends on Facebook.
Facebook wanted to find out who your friends are and wanted to suggest a friend for you. What they would do is to find out who your friends are and then find out other people who are friends with those same people. And if they are, they are very likely friends with you too. So that's how they give suggestions of new friends that you might know. And we use a very, very similar strategy.
Krishnan says the machine learning program identified similarities between brain-related genes and the 65 autism risk genes, finding still other genes that are friends of both. Princeton University computer science and genomics professor Olga Troyanskaya says certain combinations of genes may explain why one child on the spectrum is mildly affected and another child is severely disabled.
A lot of evidence points to the fact that their entire set of what the rest of their genetics looks like likely has a very strong impact on what outcome that would have, both whether they would have autism and pretty much for sure what exact symptoms they would have.
There's no cure for what has become one of the most common developmental disorders to strike young children, but early intervention in the form of physical and behavioral therapies has been shown to be beneficial to youngsters with autism. Unfortunately, there's no diagnostic test beyond observation. But researchers are hoping their work could eventually lead to a way to diagnose very young children so they can be helped as soon as possible. Jessica Behrman, VOA News, Washington.
Dr. Williams, again, thank you so much for joining us. So you heard the report. It's basically about research and perhaps some genes that may be linked to AST, autism spectrum disorder. I guess it begs the question, perhaps you can react to the story, but it also begs the question about what causes autism, even though there's no clear answer, right?
Right. I actually appreciate research. Without research, we would not even know where to start and where to go. Mm-hmm. Yes, it has been determined that no one really can give you a concrete answer that scientifically proven as to what really causes autism. Some have been identified maybe as genetic. Some have been identified as maybe some kind of neural development factor due to differences in the brain chemicals, known as the neurotransmitters in the brain. Environmental factors is also another relevant factor we need to look at. Exposure to certain chemicals, exposure to drugs, such as misoprostol and abortion-inducing drugs can cause it. Rubella, immunoregulatory drugs called Salimot. Eating certain kinds of food can also lead and exacerbate the condition. So autism, it's also speculated that it could be caused by gluten, yeast, and immunizations, mercury in the blood, you know, exposure to lead from the environment, what we eat. So, you know, to say concretely that, yes, this is a pinpointed cause of autism, it's what scientists are still battling with at this point. However, you know, with science discoveries, we're able to actually start charting the way for intervention.
Yeah, an intervention is what many experts, including yourself, are really focusing on and really encourage. And so let's start from the beginning, okay? Parents know, how can they recognize early signs of autism? Mm-hmm. Because some people don't even know what autism is. So how do you know that there is something different about your child?
Very good question. I always say a mother's instinct is always one to follow. And then, of course, some developmental specialists have come up with a milestone for development that you can chart your child's growth rate with. However, every single child is different, even those who are typical, who do not have any form of neurodevelopmental disorder whatsoever. However, there's some subtle signs that we have to watch out for. Many children with autism have atypical sensory behaviors, which may negatively impact their participation, you know, in how they interact with others, in their autonomy and determination with themselves. You could also be able to tell when they're not communicating with you as appropriately. They have not developed that monophase. And say, mommy, daddy, when they're supposed to. You know, some kind of expressive language delay or language disorder may be there. Some form of anxiety where the child cries a lot, incessantly, and you don't know why, no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. The child reacts to some food. The child will not look the parents in the eye directly. There, you know, there's a problem. When you cuddle and you show love and you don't feel it's not reciprocal in your child, then you start to wonder and worry. So those are the kind of things that you really, really need to start reacting to let you know that there's an indication that there may be a disorder. However, you must get proper diagnosis. You know, there's always a use based on typical behavior or atypical behavior to determine if a child has autism. But this has to be done by certified, qualified neurologist or psychologist, because there's some other symptoms that may manifest that are autistic-like, symptoms that are actually really not autism spectrum disorder. So we have to have very clear in the diagnosis that a child has specifically autism spectrum disorder.
So what diagnosis? You mentioned neurologist, psychologist. So who is the person, the expertise, what expertise is to diagnose autism?
Okay. The first point of call is always your pediatrician. The pediatrician should make appropriate referral to a developmental specialist, a neurologist who specializes in different types of neurodevelopmental disorders. That is the person who can diagnose. Psychologists are also trained to diagnose autism, all different types of specific learning disabilities. And when a child starts school and there are concerns from the parents, from the teachers, from people around, then, of course, they will refer to the school psychologist who will do some kind of a battery, a whole battery of assessment. These are standardized assessments that are clinical that will be able to pinpoint what a specific learning disorder is or what the possibility of an autism spectrum disorder or attention-deficit hyperactive disorder or whatever might be present in the child. Often, there's a situation of comorbid. A child may have ASD and also have ADHD. A child may have ASD and have intellectual disability. So we really need to specifically diagnose those. And it will take us in the school system, we also do psychoeducational assessment, some form of cognitive assessment or intellectual academic assessment to determine what the child's functioning skills are. So when there's a discrepancy within their ability and their functioning ability, then you know that there's a problem. So those are the professionals you will really have to rely on for real, clear, definitive definition or diagnosis of what a child has.
Okay, so first the pediatrician and then everything else that you listed. But let me ask you this. You,
yes.
We are calling you in Nigeria, right? So
yes.
This is,
yes.
You gave us an ideal case scenario, I think, right? What happens
yes.
in a country like Nigeria or another African countries? Can a parent have this typical procedure to know that the child has autism or something else?
Yes. All right. Thank you for that excellent, excellent question. Because to be perfectly honest with you, these services are not available. Mm. There are some limited areas, some limited people who maybe have had exposures or trainings outside of Nigeria who actually are able to diagnose this when they come back to Nigeria. However, the main thing is, you know, the public sector, the hospitals, public hospitals, very few of them are professionals who can diagnose this, but some do have. You know, for instance, in Abuja, I know a hospital that is owned by government. However, that's just one hospital. And we have hundreds of thousands of people with this disorder in the city. So how can one hospital satisfy all these needs? We have some private hospitals who have psychologists who may have had some kind of credential or training, you know, and are able to diagnose. But there's so far few in between. And they're not everywhere. We have millions of people with disorders in Nigeria alone. You know, when you now start looking at figures all over Africa, then you know we're in trouble because these services are not there. They're not provided. Those who are providing it, they're merely surviving, trying to be able to cope with the influx of cases they get on a daily basis. The doctors at the hospitals, at both public and private hospitals, a lot of them are not familiar with it. So there's need for them to be educated because, as I said before, I deal with the first place of contact with your pediatrician. You know, after you have a child, you know you have to now start taking the child to a pediatrician, but if the pediatrician is not aware, is not conversant of what these disorders are, the pediatrician cannot guide you in the right direction. So most people just go online. They rely on online research to find out. You know, they type in Google, my child is doing XYZ, what can it be? And that's how they've been able to self-diagnose some of what the children have.
That's very, very interesting that you say that. Now, when we're going to, well, we have to take a break, but before we do that, I wanted to ask you this question. Once you are able to diagnose, and you talked about the challenges, because the process starts with the right diagnosis anyways. So if you don't have the right diagnosis, what is the solution? What is the approach? What is your experience given all these challenges that you listed?
Okay. My experience so far in Nigeria is that a lot of parents are supporting each other. They have support groups. You know, people go into the support group, either through Facebook or WhatsApp, and they put in their concerns. All of others who have experienced similar give advice as to what they have done that has been successful or not so successful, with a caution that works for a child may not work for another. So that's really how people have been banding together to actually find resources. And there are some intervention places from centers spread across Nigeria that offer interventions and services, therapeutic services for some of these patients.
Okay. And we'll talk more about the therapy, because that's really one area that you focus on as well. So we are going to take a short break. This is a very interesting discussion with Dr. Badewa Adejube Williams. She's the founder of the Royal School of Educational Therapy in Nigeria, Lagos. And we will take a short break and come back and continue this discussion in a moment. But first, it is time for the news with Abigail Belay.
The World Health Organization, UNICEF, have issued new guidelines to increase support for breastfeeding in health facilities that provide maternity and newborn services. The new 10-step guidance describes practical ways countries can protect, promote, and support breastfeeding in hospitals. They provide the immediate health system platform to help mothers initiate breastfeeding within the first hour and breastfeed exclusively for 6 months. According to UNICEF, breastfeeding is vital to a child's lifelong health and reduces costs for health facilities, families, and governments. The WHO says breastfeeding in the first 2 years would save the lives of more than 820,000 children under the age of 5 every year. 43-year-old Jérôme Hamon is the first person in the world to receive 2 face transplants. The Frenchman had his first face transplant removed due to signs of the face rejecting placement. This was after he underwent treatment for a cold with an incompatible antibiotic that did not coincide with his immunosuppressive treatment to prevent the rejection of his face transplant. Hamon has a genetic condition that causes severe disfiguring tumors on his face called neurofibromatosis. He then was faceless in hospital for 2 months prior to having his second face transplant. Doctors who conducted the operation say a double face transplant is no longer a classified field of research, but something that can actually be done. Researchers in Berkeley are finding ways to use smartphones as microscopes in order to detect people infected by river blindness. They say this will expedite the process in giving the vaccine to those that are actually infected with the river worm, instead of everyone taking the vaccination when it's not necessary. Another parasite epidemic in sub-Saharan Africa is the Loa Loa worm. The Loa scopes is a cell phone microscope used to find blood-borne diseases in the developing world. It could be used to look at other diseases such as malaria and tuberculosis. The Loa scope is a cheaper and compact alternative to that of ordinary microscopes and can be attached to any common smartphone, which is becoming a norm to acquire in developing countries today. And that's a wrap up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing autism with Dr. Badewa Adejube Williams. She is founder of the Royal School of Educational Therapy in Lagos, Nigeria. So, Dr. Williams, we talk about signs, we talked about diagnosis. So, there is no cure for autism, right?
No.
Okay.
Right.
So what are the treatment options? What is offered to children and adults with autism if there's no cure, as we understand?
Some of these may actually, a couple of these that I'll mention may be considered, let me just mention them anyway. We've had a seminar held here in Nigeria about stem cell therapy. Some people have started exploring the possibilities. Another one is sickle therapy. You know, those two are a bit controversial, but, you know, it's open for parents to do the research and see if it's something they can afford or wish to try for their children. However, those two are beyond the majority. What we advise for the majority is, number one, you have to treat the gut. You have to treat your inside. What goes into your gut, what you eat, affects the development of your brain. So we advise parents to eat and cook and serve as organically as possible, to avoid foods that have additives, that have chemicals, preservatives, that have, you know, artificial seasonings, and just eat pure. Once you notice that children start eating pure, you start noticing a lot of improvement in especially their behavior. You know, they know the sensory processing disorder, sensory issue, you know, starts getting abated and are being treated. When a child is more relaxed and is not, you know, affected by allergies based on what the child has been eating that may be disrupting their brain function, then they can sit still in class and start and be ready to actually start learning. So that's number one, clean the gut, clean the diet. Number two, we advise physical exercise. There is correlation between the dopamine being released in the brain and the ability of the brain to assimilate and start comprehending. So we're advising a lot of physical activities. We also advise different kinds of therapeutic activities. Of course, it has to be done by professionals. I'll talk about educational therapy because I am an educational therapist. It's a specialized field. It's not just anyone who is an educational therapist. You have to have master's degree in it. What it is? It's personalized remedial instruction for individuals who are experiencing learning differences and disabilities, including but not limited to autism spectrum disorder, dyslexia, and the rest. So basically, the job of an educational therapist is to help retrain the brain, you know, through cognitive therapy so that the brain can start learning at the best, you know, you identify what the child is good at, what the child's strengths are, and what the weaknesses are. And you now use those strengths to develop the weaknesses. You know, you teach through the strengths of the child. It's usually done one-on-one or in a small group setting. I do not advise doing educational therapy with more than 6 students at a time. Okay, and it's very intensive. Another therapy that's working wonders for children here is ABA therapy. We have some ABA specialists, applied behavior analysis therapists who are in Nigeria, who have got for training all over the world and actually doing this. And that is helping to regulate the behavior of the children. So they're not as hyperactive, they're not as distracted, they're more focused, and they have better and more effective communications, not necessarily speaking, but able to communicate their needs in a more efficient way. And at the same time, they're more behaved. They start learning social interactions that are appropriate, you know, through some of what ABA does. Another therapy, of course, is, you know, when you're in a special center where you get all that you need. Sensory integration is extremely important for children with autism or any other disorder. Sensory integration therapy helps them to control their impulses, some of their sensory intolerances as well. And education is important. You have to keep teaching the child, you know. The brain is not stagnant. That's what people need to know. The brain is not stagnant at all. You can develop it. You can use therapy. You can use music therapy to relax and help them start to learn. You can use yoga therapy so that some of these people start, you know, some of their idiosyncrasies cannot be minimal for some of the way they behave or the way they learn. Mm-hmm. They cannot learn better. You know, we encourage doing vestibular therapy, vision therapy. Oh, there's so many, but they have to be done by specialists. And the child must be in school. Okay. I tell parents, first and foremost, make sure you put your child in a regular school. Okay? Mm-hmm. Depending if the child has skills. If the child can communicate, the child understands, is able to follow directions to an extent. Maybe not multi-step direction, but can follow directions. Put the child in inclusive education. See how the child will fare, because there are positives and negatives about inclusive education. If the child doesn't make academic gains, the child will definitely make social gains. All right? Mm-hmm. But if a child's disorder is so it's so severe that the child is not functioning in an inclusive setting, then you want to put the child in a special education school. Any school that offers special education services or any center that offers personalized education, remedial education for this kid. And I am actually imploring that people should focus their educational practices on the child's skills, on the child's interests. Wow. If a child shows you that he's interested in sparking, mm-hmm. do activities around sparking for the child. Use sparking to teach the child comprehension. Use sparking to teach the child addition and subtraction. The child will get it because that's what the child perseveres on. You understand? So don't just rely on teaching children with the same methodology that is not working. We have to be flexible. be resilient and the children will catch up. We have to address their executive functioning skills, help them to be organized and to start planning their processes. By being organized, they can now start organizing their brains, organizing their minds, organizing their tasks, and be able to now analyze tasks and be able to carry out tasks that you want them to carry out.
Wow, this is really a detailed expose of what's out there, and we appreciate you giving us all this information, because a lot of times people are confused, people don't know, and a lot of time we hear also about applied behavioral analysis as the therapy, right? The go-to therapy,
right,
for children with autism as well as adults. However, after your answer to my question, I see that there are a wide range of therapies that are available, and that's really good to know. Because one of the things that we have to understand for those of us who are not like experts in the field, or many people don't even understand what autism is, each child is different, right? Each child, I mean,
each child is very different.
So this therapy are really to cater to each child according to that child's need.
Right. You have to. Otherwise, you will not achieve the goal. Mm-hmm. You've got to make it, you know, personalized for the child.
Yes. So now let's talk about something that is so critical for those of us who are from Africa originally. And we know that the role of family, community, how it can put pressure sometimes on families, especially when it comes to some challenges like having a child with disability. Can you share with us some of the realities that you have confronted with, perhaps that challenges that parents tell you they have to deal with, and even your personal experience?
Okay. I'll tell you everything combined, because I've experienced working with parents. Okay. A lot of parents are really very concerned about the stigma, about what society thinks, what society perceives as the problem. Some believe that maybe it's the curse of the father or the mother that's been visited on the child. Some believe that maybe they've committed some kind of sin and now they're paying the price for it. Some believe that somebody must have done something to them from, you know, witchcraft or whatever. And that's why the child is this, or maybe the child is possessed or demonic. That mindset, that thinking is what we're battling with. Some people believe that if they take the child to the pastor will get rid of will pray and do deliverance, and the disability will disappear. And when the disability does not disappear, then, you know, it becomes a case of you must really make peace with God, because you must have done something to God for God to give you this child. Mm. We need to think beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're telling parents, please, this has nothing to do with being demonic. It has nothing to do with witchcraft. There is a science that explains this. It has to do with the brain function. You know, some people's brains are just not as developed as they should be. Some are impaired. Some are just, you know, jumbled up all over the place through no fault of a child.
Yes.
No child comes to this world imperfect, you know?
Yes.
Imagine the case of traumatic brain injury, or when the child is being forced out of the mother's womb with a force that damages the brain. Imagine things that happen when a child falls and hits the head, you know, concussions, and they lose memory. These are all things that can happen to anybody. Yes, autism spectrum disorder is, the onset is by age 3. But however, this has nothing to do with how the child, you know, came into this world.
Okay.
We said there are some questions that may contribute to it. So we need to think beyond that.
We definitely need to
learn.
Think. And Dr. Badea, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We have to leave it there. And thank you so much for joining us. We hope to have more with you, because there is much more to talk about. And that was Dr. Badea Adejuge Williams. She's founder of the Royal School of Educational Therapy in Lagos, Nigeria. You can find out more on her if you check out our Facebook page, .com/VOA Health Chat. I am your host, Lenore Nudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vungani, Abigail Belay with the news, and Skip, our engineer. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after this.